Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to another Love Letters Live. And as always, I've got something wonderful in store here. And I'm just going to take this, I'm doing this one for me, actually. When I was 29, one of my two best friends died, and it was horrible. And I had gone down there to be with her her last weekend, and she'd been sick for about 8 years. And I never thought she would die. She was too everything wonderful and too present and too strong and too beautiful and too much mine to die. In any case, she did, and it was the last I ever saw of her 9-year-old son. And I do remember her telling me that she told him that wherever she was after she's gone, she would watch over him forever. And it was just awful. It was just awful. And as the years went on, equally as awful was I couldn't find Paul, her 9-year-old son. Well, God bless Facebook. At some point, his father's face came on my screen, and I grabbed that and became friends. And about 2 days later, I realized, well, if I've got Marshall, I've got Paul. So I found Paul, and I Facebooked a message to him saying, essentially, I don't know if you even remember me, but, and he said, remember you, of course I do. This needs a phone call. Sit still. And he's been back in my family and back in part of my life since then. And that was what, about 2 years ago?
That was about 2 years ago.
And so it seems so natural. So Paul is with me right now, and to see the kind of man he has become is just exceptional. I may just burst into tears doing this. But Paul, I want to go to you. Will you just talk about your life and what you do? And what life was like maybe after your mom went.
Absolutely. Currently, I'm a dad and a teacher. I teach high school psychology.
You're a dad of teenage 12. Children.
I am a dad of teenage children. I've got one in university, and the other is in grade 11 at the school that I teach at. And I'm a husband and a coach. And
volleyball. Girls volleyball.
Yeah, and guys volleyball. And,
oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, oh,
okay.
Yeah. No, both. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me. And I guess
to go back to
that 9-year-old state when my mom passed away, it was obviously a very traumatic experience.
And you were living with your mom and your
my
stepdad.
Stepfather, Martin, yes. And at the point in time when my mom passed, I then went to my father, Marshall.
But there was, I think, if I may.
Yes.
Because I think this is so... I was touched by it at the time, and both the men wanted you.
Yes.
This
yeah.
was an unusual custody tussle because he was such a lovable, beautiful boy, and of course they both wanted him.
Regardless of how lovable maybe I was or wasn't, at that point in time, my dad got custody of me, and I went to live with my dad and my stepmom, Dolly, out in the valley in Calabasas.
Oh, so you moved to Coeur d'Alene together?
No, I actually moved out of the house when I was 15 because of, you know, that teenage angst that occurs.
Oh,
I'll talk about that. It's, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with losing my mom and the fact that my stepmom, Dolly, at the time, and looking back in hindsight, she was doing everything that she could to raise me well. Mm-hmm. And I was rebelling, I guess, at that sort of, I didn't feel the way that it was being done was correct. And, you know, a typical teenager. And I moved out of the house. It was, you know, at the time, there was a lot of confrontation. And I thought it would be best if I moved out. And I had a couple surrogate families that I lived with for a period of time. And my dad and stepmom moved to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho in 1979 or 80.
Okay.
Yeah. And I sort of kept going up for holidays at you know, during the holiday season. And at one point I was standing on Schweitzer Mountain up in northern Idaho and looking out into Washington, B.C., Montana, and Idaho and decided, why am I living in L.A.? And then I eventually...
Now, how old were you then?
I would have been 19.
Oh, so you were kind of well on your way to adulthood.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so, you know, I stayed in L.A. till I graduated high school, did a year at Pierce College, and then went up to Coeur d'Alene and did a couple more years of school up there and then took off and went to Europe for a year.
So one of the things that really interests me just in this between you and me,
yes,
and apparently you and pretty much everybody, is that you have an amazingly wonderful ability to kind of scoop up the missing parts of your past. And when you told me that, would you mind telling how you found your grandfather after so long again? That was
Absolutely, which is kind of the reason why I'm here. right now with you. So upon my mom passing, that side of the family, her father and my uncle and other relatives were sort of lost to me. I saw my grandfather once when I was 11, about 2 years after my mom passed. And that was a pretty memorable event. I remember, you know, that connection, because having lost my mom, I had sort of lost that whole part. And so him showing up at the house
was extra painful.
It did. Well, it was painful, and yet it was a part there that I guess I craved.
No, I mean, painful to lose not just your mother, but a whole clump of your family.
Oh, sorry. Yes. No, yeah. Absolutely. And you know, so that loss was there. And then, you know, when he showed up when I was 11, and I think I went fishing with my uncle Josh, who is here this weekend as well, who's a year older than me. He's 51, and I just turned 50 this year. And so, anyway, I remember that, and that was it. And so I lost contact with him for probably about 22 years. And I was at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, attending school and working on my way to becoming a teacher. And every so often, I would go up into the seventh floor of the library at SFU, where they housed all of the telephone books from across North America. There was a, you know, a reference section, and I used to peer through the San Francisco white pages because I knew that my grandfather Manny had lived in San Francisco.
I didn't, by the way.
And I was up there one day doing, you know, that thing, and a friend of mine walked by and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm trying to reconnect with my grandfather." And he said, "Well, let me help you." He said, "What's his name?" And I said, "Well, it's Manny Heller." And he said, "Well, is it Manny or is it Emmanuel?" And this light bulb went on, because I had always been looking up Manny. And sure enough, we went to Emmanuel Heller, and there were two. And the first one, I immediately wrote the numbers down, drove home to my apartment, phoned the first one. And the person that answered said, "You know, sorry, you got the wrong number, but, you know, good luck with your search." And the second one that I phoned, a woman answered. And I said, "Hi, this might sound strange, but I'm looking for my grandfather." And I didn't get any other words out. And Marlena, who's my step-grandma, yelled into the telephone, "Oh, my God, it's baby Paul." So, you know, I was 23 at the time, but still referred to as a baby, because that was
their
you
last
know,
perception.
Yeah, the last perception. And, you know, my grandfather had obviously talked about me. And he was since remarried a few times. And this was his last wife, Marlena, before he passed. And they had a son, a wonderful son named Zach, who is the reason that I'm here this weekend to celebrate his wedding. He's 31 years old and married a beautiful lady, and we just had a wonderful time at their wedding yesterday. And so anyways, that was sort of how we got back into contact. And at that point, I think I drove down to San Francisco from Vancouver about a month later to see Manny and Marlena and Zach, who was about six at the time, and regained that connection with that side of the family.
So I have a question which occurred to me last night after you had told me that you got back in touch with Manny after so many years. Did it ever occur to you, or did you ever wonder why they never called you? They knew where you were. Or was that just normal life somehow?
You know what? I think that had occurred to me. And I think looking at what Manny went through in his life after my mother's mother, my maternal grandma, had committed suicide, I think in 1963 or four. And I think he then remarried, and sort of that connection. I remember visiting Marion and Manny and that family. And so I think he had another family at that point in time. But then that ended. I think very soon after my mom had passed away. And so I think, you know, he went through some issues and some tough times until he met Marion. So, you know.
So sorry,
until he met Marlena, you know, his last wife and his fifth.
So people
and best, I would say.
Sometimes put the past behind them when it's painful, and all of it.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Manny had issues, and you know, and I do know that once I got back in contact with him, that contact was a very special contact, and he was very happy for the reconnection.
Yeah, I bet.
And as so, obviously was I.
So you've kind of got everybody now.
You know what? I think you were the last missing piece. I've met, you know, several of my mom's you know, really close friends, and coming up for the Peace March when I was 7 or 8 years old and staying with you, that memory is very strong.
I remember you said that on the phone, and of course I remembered it. I was amazed in hindsight that I spent so much time, I spent years asking people, and everybody I'd run into, do you know where Paul is? And I knew your dad had moved to Coeur d'Alene.
Yes.
And for some reason, I never occurred to me to call him to ask where you were. I was just looking for you.
Right.
And it never occurred to me that Facebook is the miracle connector. It,
you know what?
And you know what it was like? By the way, I'm sitting here now because we finally met. He walked in the door. I'm going to talk to you. You walked in the door 2 days ago. Yesterday?
Yeah, Seems like 2 days ago.
2 days ago. And it was, it was just overwhelming. It was just overwhelming. Just wrapping my arms around this man who was the boy I lost when I lost my best friend. And it was so really overwhelming. But we had been talking on Facebook for 2 years.
Yes.
And our families were connected and our children would cheer each other on just like they would have. Had Carol lived, they would have grown up together and been connected. And it took all of Facebook and 12 minutes in person.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I wish this were a television moment, as I do so often, because to look at this face is such a... Genetics is a wonderful thing sometimes. Such a combination of your mom and your dad.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Yes.
You know, it's funny because if any of my... friends at home or, you know, any of my acquaintances listen to this, they'll laugh at the Facebook comment because I do spend a fair bit of time on Facebook. And, yes. And I think a lot of that has to do with reconnecting. I've been able to reconnect with, you know, kids that I grew up with in California and, you know, went to my 30th reunion a couple of years ago. And there was sort of this explosion in Southern California with Facebook and a lot of people that, you know, I had lost contact with for about 30 years, maybe even longer than that.
It's like, you know. It's like having your whole life back in front of you in some kind of way.
It's a pretty amazing thing. And, you know, in teaching high school, I know that kids use it, you know, for different reasons, for social things and stuff like that. And I get that. And I utilize it, you know, as a coach. All my athletes are, you know, on a special little group. And, you know, it's an easy way to tell them what time practice is and everything else. But that other aspect of it, you know, reconnecting.
As your emotional
that, absolutely.
Grip.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have a question. Well, now, about your children, what did they know about your mom? Just whatever you know.
Yeah, whatever I know. I mean, I think I've shared that with them. I mean, they know that, you know, she passed away at a young age from cancer and that she was a very artistic and special lady.
Yes.
And, you know.
She was exquisitely beautiful.
She was, you know, she was my mom, so I didn't really think of that.
I.e. just the wallpaper.
That's right. But, you know, when you look back at pictures, I mean, she was a beautiful woman.
She was gorgeous and she was smart and she never, I mean, even, you know, she grew up in a home that was difficult emotionally.
Absolutely. And, I think, you know, my grandfather Manny at that time, there was definitely some issues, right, that occurred. And I know she spent a lot of time with you. She lived with you for a lot of the time.
She was at my house probably twice a week sleeping over. And never once, I mean, I knew how difficult things were at home. But as a tribute to her, I have to say there was never a shadow or echo of self-pity or complaint.
I think she was a strong woman, you know, from everybody, all of the friends that I talked to. And I think
she managed to focus on everything that was good, her friends.
Yeah.
Just really what was good. And even though she shared difficult moments with me, and she, when she was sick, I don't know if you know this, did I tell you this? When she was sick, I was away at school in Berkeley and she called me. Did I tell you this?
I don't know.
Oh,
keep going.
She called me one night. I can picture where I was standing, of course, to tell me that she had cancer.
Right.
I did tell you this?
I don't know. I'm just
and
agreeing with your story.
I was just silent, and she forged right ahead, and she said, the reason I'm calling you to tell you this is I want you to hear it from me and my voice so you'll hear that I'm okay.
Right.
I don't want you to hear it from somebody else and be frightened or worry.
Mm-hmm.
So even then, typical Carol was thinking outside herself and of the next person.
Right.
And the next 8 years were just, you know, wonderful and life as usual, and I knew she'd be here forever, and surely there'd be some mistake or...
They'd find a cure.
They'd find a cure.
Which they have now, but
shortly after she died.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
That was an extra knife in everybody's heart. And even the weekend she died, I was sitting at, I walked into the hospital, and the first thing really out of her mouth was essentially, you know, what's going on? What's new with you?
Right.
That was so typical of her.
Yeah. And as a kid at the time, I think, you know, I had a uncle who was a psychologist, and, you know, the thought at the time was don't involve the kids in bad stuff. It'll, you know, affect them long term. And we know now that, you know, you do want to, you know, be honest with your children and keep them up to date of exactly what's going on so that they can, they can deal with it.
And so also guess it, children know, we all know when something's wrong. And if we don't know what it is, we'll go to the even worse than that.
Absolutely.
I mean, we kind of go to the worst possible.
And I remember, I mean, my stepfather Martin came and got me out in Calabasas to take me to the hospital.
I remember that.
And I went to the hospital, and being an 8-year-old kid, and not knowing what the situation was, I mean, my behavior was probably awful. And
well, you didn't know that she was as sick as she was?
No, nobody told me she was dying until Martin came back to get me the following day and said, we need to go back and see your mom again. And on the way to the hospital, he said, your mom's dying. And so that was it. That was like, you know, and she died that night.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea of that. What did you, do you remember what you?
I mean.
Did you just burst into tears?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. How awfully unfair. The things we do out of ignorance.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, it wasn't necessarily ignorance to say or, you know, so
to
speak.
To keep it, I mean.
But and you know, at that time, that was the thought process of, you know, psychologists and, you know, that science changes and perceptions change of what is right and what is wrong. And, you know, I think looking at what we do now with kids whose parents are, you know, ill is to involve them in the process.
Yes.
And back then it was to hide them from the process.
Yes.
And so,
there was generally a don't talk about it.
Exactly.
Oh, well,
sweep
what
it under
whole,
the rug, it'll all be okay.
Tommy, the rock opera, Tommy.
Yes.
You never saw it, you never heard it.
Oh, no. And,
Oh, yes. Terrible time.
Yeah.
Well, I have to ask you something, and I kind of as a favor to me, and you can tell me really.
Okay.
I know you'll say yes, because you always say yes.
Okay.
But because I'm about love letters.
Yes.
I sat down a while ago to write a love letter to Carol. And I want to say that I had a dream about her years ago. And she said, I'll be back to visit you. I'll be back with you. And that was kind of it. And you're here.
I am here.
And I can see she's back in you. I mean, in some really profound way, she's back.
Yeah.
And always has been with me. I have pottery of hers that I take wherever I go, and I keep it so I can always see it. And I don't know, I don't have to really do so much of that here, but I wanted to write her a love letter. And because writing love letters to people who are gone is really a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is, where do you mail them?
Right.
So I was going to do what I tell people to do. And what I think is so wonderful is write it to her, but send it to you.
Okay.
Because love letters have to end up somewhere.
That would make sense.
Okay. And I didn't want to do it without asking you first, because I didn't want it just to show up on your doorstep.
Of course, you have my permission.
Okay. I want to do that. Okay.
Absolutely.
And, you know, those kind of love letters go down the generations. I mean, this will be Logan and Kristen's grandchildren will find this someday.
Yes.
I hope.
Yeah.
And they'll know something huge, not only about your mother and their grandmother.
Yeah.
But that they came from such loving strength.
Mm-hmm. That would be very neat.
Now, who would you write a love letter to right now if you, there's so many people in your life. Do you ever write them?
You know
letters?
What? I'm not a big letter writer. I'm a big phone person. I like to talk.
Oh,
and
that's
I like to,
yeah,
you know, and so I think if I want to say something, I try and contact that individual. And I think that's one of the things that I've done to be able to stay in contact with so many people. And that's, I think Facebook has offered me that scenario to sort of stay in contact and touch with people that, you know, and I mean, I've got a crazy amount of contacts on Facebook, which is crazy. I think it just has to do with the fact that I sort of have three different groups. I have a group of students that I've taught over the years who, you know, like to stay in contact, and I usually don't deny, you know, that sort of access. And I'd like to find out what those kids are doing that, you know, I've taught for many years now. And then I've got a sort of like, I guess, another special group of kids that I've coached, which I have a very close affinity with. And, you know, we've spent many hours together of blood, sweat, and tears and gyms and bus rides and all those other things. And then, you know, I guess there's a family group of all the relatives that are on Facebook to be able to stay in contact.
And increasing
as we go, yeah. And then the other group would be, you know, my school sort of years of people that, you know, I went to school with or elementary school with or grew up with. And, you know, so there's sort of, I can classify everybody sort of within four groups, I guess. And then even maybe a professional group, some teachers that I work with.
But what about this? What about, you're long gone.
Okay.
Your children are 70.
Yes.
And they find something with your handwriting on it, telling them how wonderful they are and the specific reasons you love them.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I should probably write that letter.
I think, you know, there's something about, people do estate planning.
Yes.
And we make sure that they have our you know, our jewelry and our everything we have, our bank accounts. And we somehow forget, I think writing a couple of love letters should be part of estate planning.
That's a neat idea.
Just a letter that says, "Dear Logan, I've just been sitting here thinking about you today, and I'm going to tell you the first 50 reasons, or the first two,
yes,
or the first three reasons or things I ever knew and loved about you."
And so as you're saying this, I'm playing things through in my mind, and I know, you know, one dream that I've always had, and I think I mentioned this to you, I remember a lot about my mom, but I don't remember her voice. And your daughter, who was here the other night, went home and found an episode of Ozzie and Harriet, which my mom was in, and, you know, she said hello. She had one line in the show, but, you know, that was the only voice
did
that
I've
heard.
Did that give you a real heart thump?
It did.
We're looking for her Groucho Marx episode.
I know. This is your life. You know,
you bet your life. But what, did you know her handwriting?
What I was going to say is, you know, I've always, because of that, you know, in the back of my mind, I've always thought, you know, if I get ill or, you know, the end is near, that I would do a video to my children.
Oh, good. Wait till the end is near, you're going to know when that is.
But this is what I'm saying is, so, you know, you're saying write the letter, and I'm like, you know, and you think about these things, and you think, if you do that, if you write that letter, or and maybe not, maybe writing the letter is the answer, but I always thinking, you know, to do the video, but it's like, then all of a sudden you're saying, you know, the end is near.
No, you're not.
No, I know you're not. In my mind, I think psychologically.
Yes. And people think that. That's
yes,
right.
Yes.
I had a client who wanted to write something. I help people write emotionally difficult, which seem to be difficult letters, which once you start are not.
Right.
But her grandmother was going to be 95 in 3 months or six, whatever it was. And she said, so, you know, right before she turns, I'm going to come to you and I want to write her a poem when she turns 95. And I said, gee, let's wait till the very end till you think she's good. It doesn't make sense to me, but I want to show you something. This is critical. Look at this letter. Perfect, right? Here's a letter that was written probably 100 years ago.
Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. 18, what does that say? 64?
No.
What?
That says 1824.
1824, and this letter is as clear as a bell.
It is.
You can read it. It's on good stationery with indelible ink, and whatever video you do is not going to be watchable in 100 years. It's not going to be watchable in 20 years. You can't use your floppy disks. Betamax, never mind.
Oh, we'll put it digital.
VCR. You know what? The technology changes every 20 days.
It does.
But this doesn't.
All right.
So if, I don't know, I'm just, I don't mean to be like a pushy mother.
You've convinced me. You've convinced me.
When my mother died, my niece, who was so bereft, they talked twice a day. They lived near each other. And she felt the loss so hugely because of how connected they were. And then she started finding letters that my mother had written her.
Right.
And she started sending them to me and saying, look what I found. It's grandma's handwriting. It's her handwriting. It's like she's here.
Right.
Handwriting. You should do one to each. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can, and as the yoga teachers say, if it's available to you.
Right.
Yes.
I like it. It's a good idea.
And I'm going to write one. I'm going to write the one to Carol that I've been wanting to write for a long time.
All right. And mail that to me. I'd love to see
it. Yes. Okay. And thank you for doing this with me.
You're very welcome.
And for coming, marching back into my life.
My Auntie Janet.
I am your Auntie Janet. Yes. Thank you, darling. This was just, it's so wonderful.
Thank you.
To have you here. And you know, if you like, I'm going to follow this up with a an article in my Examiner column on love letters and just talk about what we talked about. And that way I get to put a picture in. But if there's anything that comes up in your life or you think of that you'd like to have included, just let me know.
All right.
And, you know, always this wherever I am, I'd like to think is also home to you.
Well, I thank you so much. And I'll even say it on the podcast here that thank you for your generosity of letting us stay with you and reconnecting with you. Oh. And we've had a great time this weekend. Well, and we'll do it again.
Let's just say that that was what this – this is one of the most selfish acts I've ever committed, is having you here. It's just all for me. Oh, gosh, I love you so much.
Likewise, and your daughters and their spouse. And
it's a bigger family.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thank you, and I will be talking to you all again soon. And please remember, say what you feel while you still have the chance, as my friend and former partner in Love Letters, Teresa, used to say. And you can always write a love letter to someone who's gone. You still have a chance. What you can't do is write a love letter once you're gone. And how sad to pass out of this world and not leave something behind that others can hold in their hand close to their hearts. And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, just try it. You'll see that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
Well said.